Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. So imagine discovering that the reason a patient developed a really severe mental health condition, like schizophrenia, had less to do with their direct lifestyle choices, and almost entirely to do with a hidden genetic traffic jam happening in a completely different part of their biological network.
Right, which is, it's a wild thing to think about.
It really is. I mean, we look at the world around us and we observe this staggering scale of the mental health crisis, where 1 in 8 people globally suffer from some form of mental health phenotype. And that accounts for over 15% of total years lived with disability. So naturally, we try to draw straight lines.
Yeah, we crave simplicity. We assume a lack of sleep directly causes depression, or that, you know, smoking directly triggers psychotic disorders. But human biology, well, it actively resists those straight lines.
It totally defies them.
Exactly. When we look at the genetics of mental health and lifestyle behaviors, we're looking at this deeply interconnected system where symptoms often masquerade as the root causes.
Right. So here is the question for you, the listener. What really happens when you try to untangle this massive web of overlapping lifestyle habits and mental health conditions using pure genomic data? Like, how could this change our understanding of what is actually causing a disease versus what is just a biological side effect?
Because that's the whole point of this deep dive, right? We're exploring a new analytical framework that fundamentally rewrites the map of mental health liabilities.
Yeah, a methodology that separates the true biological culprits from the innocent bystanders caught in the crossfire of our genetic code. So today we celebrate the work of Irina Zuber, Twenty Cronje, Nakai, Dipender Gill, and Leonardo Bottolo from institutions including Imperial College London and the University of Cambridge, who have advanced our understanding of complex pathways toward disease using joint Mendelian randomization.
It's a fantastic paper.
It is. And this research was published in the American Journal of Human Genetics, Volume 112, on May 1st, 2025.
So to really grasp the leap forward this research represents, we have to establish the wall that genetic epidemiology has been hitting for the last decade.
Right, the wall.
Yeah. Historically, to figure out if an exposure, say, smoking causes an outcome like depression, you observe a population. But those observational studies are, well, they're perpetually haunted by confounding variables.
The classic correlation versus causation trap.
Exactly.
You observe that people who smoke have higher rates of depression, but you don't know if the smoking biologically causes the depression, or if maybe people with depression are using nicotine to self-medicate.
Or if there's a third completely unmeasured factor.
Right, like chronic socioeconomic stress that independently causes both the smoking and the depression.
Yeah, that third unmeasured factor is the confounder, and it is the absolute bane of observational science, which is why the field turned to Mendelian randomization, or MR attempts to bypass those environmental confounders by using a person's genetic variations as a proxy for the exposure. It uses genetic markers as instrumental variables.
Okay, let's unpack this with an analogy to make sure we're grounded here.
Sure.
Using a genetic instrumental variable is kind of like a randomly assigned lottery ticket given to you at birth.
I like that.
Right. So if we want to study the effect of smoking on depression, instead of looking at whether you actually smoke, which is influenced by your stressful job or your peer group, we look at whether you drew the genetic lottery ticket that predisposes you to nicotine addiction.
Because your genes were locked in at conception.
Exactly. They yeah. can't be altered by your stressful job later in life.
That is the core logic of the MR paradigm. By relying only on the genetic predisposition to an exposure, the environmental noise just, it falls away. We get to look at the pure biological blueprint.
Which sounds great.
It is, but traditional MR has a really severe limitation. It generally operates on a binary A to B framework. It tests one exposure against one outcome at a time. And as we just said, human biology is not a series of isolated one-way streets.
No, it's trying to understand mental health with traditional MR is like trying to fix a city's traffic problem by only staring at one single intersection.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
You might think you found the source of the jam, completely missing that a bridge is closed 3 miles away.
In genetics, this interconnectedness creates a massive problem, right?
A huge problem. We call it pleiotropy. The genetic variants we use as our lottery tickets, well, they often do more than one job in the body.
Right.
A gene that predisposes you to smoke might also independently affect your sleep cycle through a completely separate biological pathway.
Which muddies the waters.
Exactly. So when scientists realized this, they developed multivariable Mendelian randomization, MVMR.
To analyze multiple exposures at once. Right. But even MVMR hits a wall when the exposures start interacting with each other. If education levels influence your likelihood to smoke, and smoking influences your sleep, MDMR really struggles to figure out the hierarchy of those dependencies. It just sees a cluster of correlated genetic signals.
Which brings us to the methodological breakthrough of this paper. The researchers developed a Bayesian causal graphical model called MITRDAG to map the entire grid simultaneously.
Yes, MITRDAG.
Let's break down that acronym for the listener.
Mm-hmm.
So DAG stands for Directed Acyclic Graph. In data science, a graph isn't like a bar chart. It's a visual web of nodes connected by lines.
Right.
Directed means those lines have arrows indicating a one-way street of cause and effect. And acyclic means there are no impossible time-traveling loops.
Right.
You can't have exposure, A cause B, B cause C, and C turn around and cause A. The biological timeline has to flow forward.
Perfectly explained. And the MITRDAG algorithm operates on three interlinked strategies or pillars to build this graph. First, it anchors itself in the MNR paradigm we just talked about. It uses summary-level genetic data from large biobanks as its instrumental variables. This enforces a strict directional boundary. Genetically predicted lifestyle exposures can cause mental health outcomes, but the mental health outcomes can't reach back in time and alter your genetics.
Okay, so that establishes the foundation. We're dealing with pure genetic signals,
yeah,
immune to environmental noise. But that still doesn't tell us how a factor like education and a factor like smoking connect to each other within the network. How does the model figure out which way the traffic is flowing between the exposures themselves?
That requires the second pillar, structure learning.
Structure learning.
Yeah. Instead of human researchers guessing the connections, the algorithm mathematically interrogates the data to learn the web of dependencies. It calculates the conditional probabilities across all the variables simultaneously.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it figures out how the different exposures interact and, crucially, how the genetic liabilities for different mental health outcomes interact with one another.
But wait, I need to push back on this. How can a computer algorithm definitively know what's a cause and what's just a really tight coincidence without running a real-world physical trial? It sounds like we're trusting a math equation to solve the physical reality of human disease.
I get that. But what's fascinating here is how the algorithm achieves this through the third pillar, interventional calculus.
Interventional calculus.
Right. It's based on computer scientist Judea Pearl's DO calculus. There is a fundamental mathematical difference between seeing a correlation and doing an intervention.
Okay, give me an example of the difference between seeing and doing.
Well, think of a barometer in a storm. If you see the needle on a barometer drop, you can confidently predict that a storm is coming. They are highly correlated.
Right, obviously.
But if you mathematically do an intervention, like if you manually reach out, grab the needle of the barometer and force it to drop, you don't cause a storm to materialize in the sky.
Because the dropping needle is just a downstream symptom of the atmospheric pressure, which is the true root cause.
Exactly. MITRDAG's algorithm performs mathematical interventions on the genetic data. Once it learns the structure of the network, it simulates what would happen if it forced one specific node like smoking to change while holding the rest of the web constant.
That's brilliant.
If it forces the smoking needle to move and the depression outcome moves with it, it identifies a true causal pathway. If it moves the needle and nothing else happens, it knows it's just looking at a barometer.
Okay, that distinction between seeing and doing mathematically makes so much sense.
Hmm.
But obviously the researchers didn't just write this algorithm and immediately assume it worked perfectly on human biology, right?
No, they subjected MITRDAG to some severe stress tests.
Right.
They tested it against the most advanced models currently used in the field, specifically MR-BMA and a network MR tool called MR2. And to do this, they created highly complex synthetic data sets to see if the algorithms could be tricked.
And the most punishing of these simulations was called the DAG-X-DAG-Y scenario.
Yes. In that scenario, the researchers simulated a deeply entangled network. They created a web of primary exposures that caused secondary exposures, which in turn caused multiple outcomes, which then caused secondary outcomes.
Just a labyrinth of pleiotropy.
Total labyrinth. And when they ran the older models on the synthetic data, those models threw false positives everywhere. They saw two things moving together at the end of the chain and mistakenly declared a direct causal link between them.
Because the older models couldn't see the hidden hubs mediating the traffic. They were just looking at the final destination and drawing a straight line back to the start.
Precisely. But Mr. Dagg, because it models the dependencies within the exposures and within the outcome simultaneously, recognized the mediators. It successfully shrank the false positive causal relationships to zero.
Wow. Zero false positives.
Yeah. It didn't get fooled by the biological barometer.
That's incredible. And once they proved the math worked in these chaotic simulations, they brought Mr. Dagg into the real world. They pointed this tool at the immense complexity of psychiatric genetics.
Yeah, they utilized massive summary-level GWAS data genome-wide association studies covering hundreds of thousands of individuals. They fed the algorithm data for six major lifestyle exposures.
Okay, let's list those. Genetically predicted education, physical activity, sleep duration, alcohol consumption, smoking, and leisure screen time.
Right. And those are the six pillars of modern public health advice. We're constantly told that manipulating those six things will dictate our health.
Exactly. So they tested those six against seven major mental health phenotypes: major depressive disorder, ADHD, anorexia nervosa, bipolar disorder, autism spectrum disorder, schizophrenia, and a measure of general cognitive performance.
So we have a grid of six exposures and seven outcomes.
Right. And older single intersection models would look at this data and draw lines everywhere. They'd say sleep affects depression, screens affect ADHD, alcohol affects schizophrenia.
But when Mr. Dagg applied its structure learning and interventional calculus to filter out the noise, the resulting map was astonishingly sparse. Out of all those complex lifestyle factors, Mr. Dagg revealed that only two emerged as significant root cause points of intervention.
Education and smoking.
Just those two.
But wait, only education and smoking. What about leisure screen time? I mean, the prevailing narrative right now is that screen time is a primary driver of the mental health crisis.
I know, and this is where the power of the Dagg network really becomes visible. Mr. Dagg showed that factors like screen time and sleep duration are not root biological causes for these genetic liabilities.
Well, not.
No, they are downstream effects mediated by other factors in the web. For instance, the data revealed that a higher genetic liability for education has a negative causal effect on both smoking and leisure screen time.
So if you only look at the intersection of screen time and mental health, you assume the screens are the cause. But Mr. Dagg zooms out and realizes the screens are just a symptom. The true causal momentum is originating further up the chain, at the education node.
It completely forces us to reconsider where we intervene. If you want to change the downstream outcomes, you have to target the upstream hubs.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Let's focus on a specific pathway that perfectly illustrates this, because this finding regarding schizophrenia is a massive paradigm shift.
It really is.
For years, observational epidemiology and even some earlier genetic studies claimed there was a direct biological causal link between smoking and the development of schizophrenia. The data always showed a thick, bold line connecting the two.
Yeah, that correlation has been a long-standing fixture in the literature. But when Mr. Dagg mapped the dependencies within the mental health outcomes themselves, it uncovered a hidden path that completely dismantled that old narrative.
Okay, walk us through the mechanics of that. How did Mr. Dagg prove the straight line was an illusion?
Well, when the algorithm mapped the network, it found that the genetic liability for smoking does not point directly to the genetic liability for schizophrenia.
It doesn't.
No. Instead, smoking directly increases the genetic liability for major depressive disorder, or MDD.
Okay, so the first link in the chain is smoking to MDD.
Right. Then, MDD acts as a massive central hub in the psychiatric network. The genetic liability for MDD directly increases the liability for bipolar disorder.
Okay.
And finally, bipolar disorder directly increases the liability for schizophrenia.
So it's a chain reaction. Smoking to MDD to bipolar to schizophrenia. How does the math prove that the direct smoking to schizophrenia link is false?
This brings us back to the interventional calculus. The algorithm mathematically holds the MDD node constant, It basically says, let's freeze MDD so it can't fluctuate, and then let's simulate a change in smoking.
And what happened?
When it does that, the genetic correlation between smoking and schizophrenia drops to absolutely zero. The signal vanishes.
Wow.
That proves the causal signal was never a direct line. It was traveling through MDD the entire time.
That fundamentally alters how we view the disease architecture. Mm. The smoking was causing a genetic traffic jam at the MDD intersection, which eventually backed up into bipolar, which then spilled over into schizophrenia.
Exactly.
And the older models just saw a car entering the highway at smoking and exiting at schizophrenia and assumed they drove straight there.
Yeah, the clinical implications of this are just immense. If we connect this to the bigger picture, Enderdag identified major depressive disorder as a superhub. It's a central mediating node for multiple psychiatric phenotypes, not just the pathway to schizophrenia.
So practically speaking, what does this mean for preventative psychiatric medicine?
It suggests that if clinical interventions, whether pharmacological or behavioral, could effectively treat or prevent MDD, you wouldn't just be curing depression.
Right, because of the cascade.
Exactly. Because MDD mediates so many of these pathways, intervening at that central hub could theoretically halt the downstream cascade, preventing the subsequent development of bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, or even anorexia nervosa. You cut off the fuel supply to the rest of the network.
That makes such a compelling case for aggressively prioritizing early intervention for depression, not just as a standalone condition, but as the gateway to the broader psychiatric network.
Right.
But, you know, as we analyze this map, I have to point out a finding that seems highly counterintuitive. The data output says that higher genetically predicted education directly increases the risk for autism spectrum disorder, or ASD. From a biological standpoint, does going to school actually cause autism? That doesn't make intuitive sense.
No, it doesn't, and this is a phenomenal point to raise. It highlights why algorithmic outputs still require deep domain expertise to interpret. We have to look at the data source. Minderdag is analyzing summary statistics from genome-wide association studies, drawing from massive databases like the UK Biobank.
Right, these huge repositories of genetic and medical data.
But think about how someone gets flagged as having ASD in those databases. The GWS data relies on clinical diagnostic codes. This introduces a well-known issue in genomics called ascertainment bias.
Okay. Yeah. Ascertainment bias. So it's about who is actually getting counted.
Yes. The genetic markers predicting higher educational attainment do not cause the underlying biological neurodivergence of autism. However, an individual who is embedded in a standardized formal educational system for a longer period is subjected to far more institutional observation.
Oh, I see.
They are significantly more likely to have their neurodivergent traits recognized, formally evaluated, and officially diagnosed by medical professionals.
So the algorithm is technically correct based on the data it was fed. It sees a strong causal link between education and the presence of an ASD diagnostic code.
Exactly.
But as researchers, we have to synthesize that and recognize it's a sociological pathway, a diagnostic bias, not a biological mutation caused by reading textbooks.
Right. The typical age of onset for core ASD traits precedes advanced formal education. So biologically, the timeline doesn't support education as the origin. The structured environment of the education system serves as the mechanism for diagnostic capture.
That makes total sense.
Tools like Minderdag are incredibly powerful for mapping the network, but we must apply our understanding of ascertainment bias and biobank architecture to interpret why the arrows point the way they do.
It's a vital reminder for anyone working with GWO's data. The map is only as accurate as the territory it's drawn from. If our healthcare system has biases in who gets diagnosed, those biases will be digitized, embedded in the biobank, and eventually output by the algorithm as a causal link.
And the authors of this paper are highly transparent about this limitation. It really highlights the need for future iterations of precision medicine to better distinguish between the core biological traits of a condition and the socioeconomic likelihood of receiving a formal diagnosis.
Right.
As the underlying biobank data becomes more refined, the causal maps generated by Minderdag will become even more precise.
So bringing this all together, what we are looking at is a massive leap forward in how we model human health. By utilizing Bayesian causal graphical models and relying purely on genetic instrumental variables, Minderdag allows us to bypass the noise of environmental confounders.
It really does.
It proves that we can no longer isolate single variables in a vacuum. By mathematically mapping the hidden connections between our behaviors and our genetics, it reveals that some causes of disease are actually just downstream symptoms of something else entirely.
It transitions genetic epidemiology from a flat, two-dimensional view of isolated correlations into a rich, three-dimensional reality of biological cascades.
So what does this all mean for you? The next time you read a flashy headline claiming X causes Y, ask yourself, are they looking at the whole traffic grid or just one intersection? What other hidden biological hubs might be steering your health without you even knowing? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Draw the edges in the dark. Follow the edges.